time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Julie Mock and Skip Dreps. Julie Mock is president of Veterans of Modern Warfare, and Skip Dreps is a local disability rights consultant. Julie and Skip, thank you both for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start out, if you could tell us about your organization, Veterans of Modern Warfare.
Veterans of Modern Warfare is a veteran service organization serving those who have served our nation since August 2nd, 1990, which was the invasion of Kuwait. And we're different from other service organizations in that we specialize actually in Gulf War veteran issues up through the issues of today.
All right. And how did you get involved with your organization in these issues?
I'm one of the incorporators of Veterans of Modern Warfare, and my passion stems from my own experience as a Gulf War veteran and coming back from the Gulf War and having the Veterans Administration not accepting Gulf War veterans and our debilitating issues. As we approached the Veterans Administration, many Gulf War veterans were turned away, being told basically that we were hypochondriacs and referred to psychologists and psychiatrists for care and being prescribed antipsychotic medications, as we actually debilitated from medical issues. And only recently have they been acknowledged.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit more about what your experience in the Persian Gulf was?
I was at a forward evacuation hospital, the 12th EVAC, and we were actually very close to the borders of Kuwait and Iraq. And we were exposed to the chemical plume that was created by the demolition of Kamisia, which was a depot for weapons. And we also were exposed to oil well fires. And we were also given pyrazinamide bromide pills, which was a medication that was to protect us from nerve agents. And what that was basically was a medication that was supposed to be a myelin defense shield. So it was supposed to coat the nerves to protect us from agents that would demyelinate them, so essentially cause scarring of the nerve tissue or deteriorate the nerves. And what we have found since then is that Gulf War veterans are presenting with symptoms of demyelination and increasingly being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Now, it's my understanding that the PB tablets or pills you were given, that was a drug that was relatively untested and pushed through by the government, wasn't it?
That's exactly correct. And as early as 1981, there were studies that showed in primates and in mice, there was permeability in the blood-brain barrier. And even though that risk was present and presumably known by the Department of Defense, they requested a fast track from the FDA, which was granted, and we were given this medication without any human studies at all. And there was the permeability issue known by them, and we, of course, have suffered the results of blood-brain permeability as a result of taking PB pills. And only recently has this been acknowledged. So for 18 years, essentially, we've been suffering the effects of basically neurotoxic exposure without recognition.
You have to remember, Mike, our government was very scared back then because Iraq had the potential back then of weapons of mass destruction. One of those weapons was sarin. And so the only defense that we knew of helping our troops and protecting our troops going into a modern battlefield of all of these new chemical weapons that we helped produce and distributed to Iraq, we knew that they had them. We didn't have a defense against them. So we used this experimental drug that was going to be tested and going to be fast-tracked and followed up by the Department of Defense, but never was. But our government was scared. We didn't know what we were going to be up against, so they prophylactically gave hundreds of thousands of our soldiers and sailors and airmen and our Marines this drug to help with the hope of protecting them in the battlefield. They knew there would be consequences of administering this drug in the long term. The crime and the shame was they never followed it up.
And how much Did you? Is that like one dose you would take of that? Is that something you took over a period of time?
It was taken over a period of time. You know, depending on the length of time soldiers actually took the medication, it seems to determine how seriously ill they are. Those of us who took it perhaps for a shorter period of time don't have, for example, gastrointestinal issues. And those who took it for a longer period of time have significant issues in that area. And others of us have chronic headaches and demyelination issues, tremors, things of that nature that are neurological.
And Mike, after spending hundreds of millions of dollars in research over 16 years, the only thing that we found out is these pills, along with pesticides that were used in the theater of war there, were the combination that causes a causal relationship that leads now the government to believe that those two factors have caused now what we know as Gulf War illness.
So when did you, Julie, when did you first start noticing ill effects from being there?
I started noticing around 1997, and that's when we received actually a second notification from the Department of Defense that we were exposed to Camisea chemical plumes and may perhaps experience some illness. But we were led to believe that it was only a small percentage of us that would be ill. And at that time, they were, we were given a number of 100,000. 100,000 of us were exposed to this chemical plume. And that was, there was no acknowledgement at that time of the danger that pyrazinamide bromide might have caused us.
Did you have any effects while you were there from using that?
Actually, we did. In March, which was at the time of the detonation, chemical alarms went off frequently, and many of us had chronic severe headaches, rashes, skin rashes, flat, hot, red, itchy rashes that still persist today and come and go. Those were the first symptoms that we had, and perhaps that was because of the chemical cloud. But other people developed really significant gastrointestinal problems, had a hard time eating food, chronic diarrhea, and things of that nature.
And the destruction of the sarin and such, was that U.S. forces that destroyed that, or was that the Iraqis that destroyed that?
U.S. forces, the U.S. Army.
And so, 97, that's when you started noticing things were...
Chronic fatigue, things like that, and increasingly symptoms of multiple sclerosis, which I was ultimately diagnosed with in 2003.
Now, do you have any relatives that have MS or anything like that?
No.
Okay, so you have clean family record for that. Mm-hmm. And have things since 97 gotten worse?
Oh, significantly. And in fact, I have been declared 100% disability rated by the Veterans Administration. And, you know, unfortunately, many Gulf War veterans have yet to be service connected for their issues. Many are connected for psychological issues, but their medical issues have yet to be validated, and it's a struggle yet today.
And was that a struggle to get that rating with the VA?
It was. It definitely was. And until I had clear symptoms of multiple sclerosis and actually brain lesions, I wasn't able to get connected at all.
And the number of veterans who are suffering from the first Gulf War, I understand, is like a third of them, roughly?
Exactly. It's one out of four. One out of four, and there were 697,000 of us deployed in theater.
And yet, did I hear you correctly, that a lot of those, or a significant portion, aren't getting the help they need?
Probably a third of us, out of that third, are not receiving any care directly related to their illness.
And, Mike, if you think about the other wars, from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, even today, veterans only have 1 year following their military service to file a claim for anything that happened to them during service or 1 year following service. And the government felt that that was plenty of time to know the effects of what would happen to you during your military service is to give you an extra year after you got out, so if symptoms developed from your military service, you could claim those if they caused a disability. Now, that's also your entitlement to care and treatment. That's been extended for the current veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan in our global war on terror now to 2 years of eligibility. In the Gulf War, their eligibility has extended until 2011, and we're asking now for a 5-year extension of that to 2016 so we can discover the causes and treatments for Gulf War illness. So 20 years after Julie's exposure in the Gulf War, we're still asking our government to provide them medical coverage and entitlement to file claims, because our government still doesn't know what the cause and effects of her military service was. And that's true for over 600 and some odd thousand veterans today.
There's been no research on treatment at all. In fact, there's no standardized exam established within the Veterans Administration. And because there's no treatment research that's been conducted, we're asking for the 5 years so that there's a chance for science to catch up with us. We know that ALS, for example, is twice as likely than the civilian population within Gulf War veterans. We know that fibromyalgia is service-connected now because there's such a predominant diagnosis rate within Gulf War veterans. So the neurological symptoms that we've had are evolving into diagnosable diseases and illnesses. And it's taken this long for these trends to appear obvious within the VA. And we're asking right now, in order to support Senator Murray's legislation to service-connect Gulf War veterans with multiple sclerosis, presumptively, that they mine and sort their records in order to definitely confirm the trend of MS within our cohort. And unfortunately, there seems to be a selective ability and willingness to do that for us. They were able to do it for ALS, but there seems to be an unwillingness to do it for MS. Many who are diagnosed with MS are having their diagnoses change to demyelinating disease. They may not be any sicker or any more well than a patient with MS, and the difference is that the ability to receive drugs that would help prevent further demyelination, which patients with MS receive, is removed, as is the base rate of 30% disability rating. So there's no base rate for demyelinating disease as far as a service-connected disability, but there is for MS.
So what's your sense of why MS isn't being included, isn't being supported?
My feeling is that there's such a large number that it would be so costly for the VA to acknowledge us that they're denying it and trying to hide that.
You were saying before we went on the air that there's a high rate of MS in this area,
There is a high rate of MS in Washington State. However, we have veterans around the country, and a lot of folks from southern states. And you have to remember, too, that during the Gulf War, only 7% of those deployed in theater were women. So the primary number is men, and typically in the civilian population, women are twice as likely to be diagnosed with MS.
And in Julie's case, in the case of the Gulf War veterans, it's almost 4 times more prevalent in their population than it is in the civilian population, no matter if it's here in Washington State or in Florida. So we know, like we did with the Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange, when there's a difference in the population, when they have diseases or disabilities, then we know that something happened to them during their military service to cause that. We look back and we know that that was Agent Orange a long time ago with Vietnam veterans. Now we look back and we now know that it was PB, this pill that was given to them to protect them, that caused now a variety of these illnesses, from ALS to Parkinson's to brain cancer to many of these diseases that had to occur within 1 year following service but are not manifested now for 20 or 30 years. So the Department of Veterans Affairs has 2 sets of rules. 1 set of rules for those veterans who just got out, who have a disability that occurred in military service, like mine, who fractured their back. We know what happened to me. And we know the residuals within 1 year of me getting out. In Julie's case, multiple sclerosis developed within 7 years of her getting out. So it wouldn't have mattered with Julie, because that 7-year presumptive period covers all veterans when it comes to multiple sclerosis. But in her cohort, in the Persian Gulf War veterans, they're coming up 8 years and 9 years and 10 years and 15 years and just 16 and 17 years following their exposure and their service. they're developing multiple sclerosis with no known reason, no history in their family. And all of a sudden, they're getting sick, and now we're knowing why. So that's why now Congress has a great urge and need to treat this group of veterans before we forget them like we did the Korean War veterans. Vietnam veterans said, we would never let another generation be treated the way we were. And we're trying to keep that promise now with the veterans of modern warfare, that we can help support them and have them stand up to Congress and say, we were treated unfairly. And now Congress is saying, yes, you were. And we acknowledge that. And how can we help you?
So is it your sense that it's just primarily a liability issue that the government has such a short window on when you can report your illnesses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, Congress provided relief to the company who made those pills in terms of indemnity. They indemnified the company, which happened to be the state of Michigan, who produced those drugs. So it would have been a big cost. It would have bankrupted the state of Michigan. Let me give you an example. When Vietnam veterans sued Dow Chemical, who made Agent Orange, it cost Dow Chemical almost $200 million. Well, that was 40 years ago. That $200 million now would be almost $1.3 billion in damages and costs. If you compare that to the Persian Gulf War veterans, that's just a drop in the bucket to their indemnity and their liability. They're three times more likely to have a disability than the Vietnam veteran was.
I'm curious, do you know the state of Michigan, the facility there that produced the PB, is that related to the same facility in Michigan that was originally producing the anthrax vaccine?
Yes, it was.
Biogen. Biogen, ironically, also makes a medication to treat multiple sclerosis.
Okay, starting to see a connection here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Skip, you'd previously mentioned $200 million plus dollars spent on studies or research. What has come of those?
Oh, I think it's over $180 million that's been spent. We're asking in this next year's budget for Congress an additional $60 million just for next year for studies to be done.
A lot of the studies that were done in the past were psychological studies.
Mm-hmm. They went down this rabbit hole thinking that it was all in Julie's head. Well, it literally was in Julie's head, but it wasn't a psychosomatic disorder. In her case, it was multiple sclerosis that was in her head. When this blood-brain barrier was broken by this drug that allowed the body to break down and the nerves not to be protected, produced chronic fatigue syndrome, manifested itself in so many different ways, that it didn't produce something that the doctors could put their finger on and say, ah, this is it. This is it. When you destroy the nervous system, you come up with hundreds of different diagnoses. That's why medical science was so confused. They've never seen this before. They didn't know what it was. It was an experimental drug that they didn't follow up on the experiment with. Not until today.
So they have they done more recent studies on PB? Or did it pretty much get written off at that point?
No, there was a study done that was completed last year. And the finding for that study was that combined with the pesticide, that was what had made us ill. And it caused actual changes in the brain that were visible through MRIs.
All right. Because you tend to not get a lot of studies where they study more interactions with other, you know, chemicals and or drugs. So
no, but can you believe, Mike, this was just announced November of last year by our government, that they found a connection between two things that led to their belief now that there's a causal relationship, that it's not all in their heads, that it wasn't PTSD or stress-related, that now they know where to go look for a cause so they can find a treatment for them. That's what we're so concerned with. It's not so much the compensation. It's not so much the recognition. It's finding a treatment for Gulf War illness that we're interested in. And it's not just so much for the veteran, but it's for their children. They're coming up with an alarming number of birth defects in Gulf War parents.
Not just physical, but neurological as well, neurological changes. And actually, there was a study done at Washington State that showed through pesticide use, there are generational changes without genetic alterations.
And, Julie, haven't your children been directly impacted by this?
They have, most especially our oldest son. And it's not uncommon in Gulf War veterans for a child to have a cluster of neurological challenges that aren't typical, and nor are they familial. So they're not found anywhere else in the family. They're an anomaly.
And have you gotten any support from the government in what's happening to your children?
No acknowledgement whatsoever. None.
So in addition to the frustrations that you've had to go through just personally trying to battle this, I have to imagine, or it's unimaginable, what you have to go through to try and get support for your kids.
No, it's been devastating. And fortunately, we've been able to provide for our child through private care. But, you know, so many Gulf War veterans have been debilitated for so long, they may not be employed with good insurance, and they don't have necessarily the wherewithal or the resources to provide the support their children need. And it's really been a travesty.
So, you, Julie, you recently spoke before the Advisory Committee on Gulf War Veterans.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that process, and what did you basically tell them?
Well, they're visiting different veterans administration hospitals throughout the country, and I find it encouraging that they're actually going out and listening to Gulf War veterans, their experiences that they've had in their local hospitals, and listening to their stories. And, you know, we'll see what happens as far as the committee and their final recommendations. But I still find it encouraging that veterans are coming together in their own communities, talking with each other, and having their stories made public.
Just got about 5 minutes left. So what are you proposing? What would you like to see done?
I'd like to see Gulf War veterans who have clusters of symptoms that are diagnosable, undiagnosed illness, actually, which is what Gulf War illness is, clusters of symptoms such as gastrointestinal disorders, irritable bowel syndrome, tremors, chronic headaches, rashes. There are different clusters of symptoms like that that are defined as Gulf War illness. I'd like to see them all presumptively service-connected so that they can receive the compensation that they earned through their service to our country. We need to have the 5-year extension immediately so that veterans are given the benefit of the doubt, and that we give the opportunity for research to find treatments, because there is no treatment. There are no standardized tests. In fact, one of the huge issues regarding Gulf War illness is that there's no diagnostic test that shows a veteran positive for a specific illness. It's basically the cluster of symptoms together that provides the diagnosis of Gulf War illness. We also request that there are registries. We don't know what the mortality rate of Gulf War veterans is. We know anecdotally people are dying very young. They've been ill perhaps for a long period of time with this cluster of undiagnosed illness symptoms that is Gulf War illness, and they all of a sudden become worse and they die in a short period of time at, you know, ages 47 or 45 years old. We need to have a registry, a mortality registry, and surviving families can then submit death records with medical records. We need to have a child and birth registry so that we can find trends within our children. We need to have a multiple sclerosis registry so that we can find out how many of us are actually diagnosed.
And in short, Mike, we need to bring this problem out into the light. The government has hidden this problem from the Gulf War veteran and from the American public for over 17 years. And now it's time that we need to not only come out of the light, we need to find out how many of them have been affected and welcome them home. Can you imagine in 2011, the government saying, stop, we no longer can afford to treat you, and close the doors on a whole generation who won a war for us, who freed a country for us? That's what we're facing, and that's what we won't let happen on our watch. We won't let that go down. And we're very confident that our Congress and this Congress will extend that delimiting date until they can find a cure for their Gulf War illness.
We accept the fact that our government gave us a medication that they believed would protect us more than it would harm us. I believe that. I believe that that's true. However, that's not how it played out. And it's time, finally, for there to be accountability for that decision.
Are you hopeful that, I don't know if he's been appointed yet, but I thought the main candidate for the VA was General Shinseki.
We're very hopeful that General Shinseki as will provide leadership. He's been confirmed as the new VA secretary. I know Eric. Eric lost a foot in Vietnam. He has a prosthesis. He's a wonderful man. He's very responsible. And this will be one of his first duties, is to extend the period of Gulf War illness. The secretary of the VA has tremendous powers that Congress has given him. He can presumptively service-connect the Gulf War veteran for their illness today. Hopefully he will do that tomorrow, and that tomorrow will not be 16 years from now. That tomorrow will be during his watch as the new VA secretary. That during his watch, they'll find a cure. That during his watch, that they'll presumptively service-connect them without having to go back to Congress to create new laws. We're very confident that this honorable man will do the right thing.
After the election, we were actually contacted by the presidential transition team, and we met with them several times, and they really listened to us. And in fact, one of the PTT members was actually a Gulf War veteran, and they were made very aware of what our needs were. And I have great hopes that they will actually recognize our needs and satisfy them.
And why we have hope is the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, Bob Filner, Congressman Filner from California, specifically invited the Veterans of Modern Warfare to brief him on their issues in a private meeting. And with the great support of Senator Patty Murray here, who's the first woman who ever in our history of our country sat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, will champion this issue, and between the two of them, the House and the Senate will bring legislation and bring advocacy and bring money to this issue in the next budget to President Obama, and we're very confident that President Obama will sign this legislation and will help this generation come home to an America that opens them up with arms and says, we want to thank you for your service, and we want to treat you for your illness.
Yeah, I got to say, I have trouble understanding why there would be any limitation on time limitation on reporting illnesses. That doesn't make sense to me. But specifically, it still sounds like, I mean, you were asking for $60 million more in research testing. I mean, it seems like a fraction when we're already putting $1 billion a day into the war in Iraq.
I think we intend for there to be $60 million a year in consecutive years.
Yeah, that's just $60 million for FY 2010, which will begin August 1st of this year, for a fiscal year. Currently, the appropriation has, which will be marked up in March, only is going to request about $40 million. So we're urging them to, as Julie said, create registries so we know, mine records so we can get databases out so that we can know. Create registries. Don't hide results of research that they've done. Publish them. Let us know what they found. Many of the research that they've done over the years, they've not published. They've done studies, but they never told us and never published the results. So it's just recently that we've been learning what's been done and what we know.
So that would seem to be another item to add to the list, is being able to see all this previous research that has been done.
We would love to see that, because if we could, we could probably ask Congress for a lot less money in research, because we'd have more information that would be able to pinpoint and target the causes.
Is that something that can be FOIA'd, since with the new administration it appears they're loosening up the tight grip they have on government documents?
Well, Mike, it's almost like the documents of our prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. They're spread throughout through many different departments of our government that it would take years, really, to pull them all together.
Unfortunately, we are just about out of time. Quickly, how can people find out more about Veterans of Modern Warfare?
Our website, vmwusa.org, has lots of information about our locally based national chapters, and we keep our website updated. And we also have an 800 number that is listed on the site as well. And we welcome any and all contact from veterans who have served since August 2nd, 1990.
Can you give out that 800 number now? Don't have it. Okay. All right. We'll try and get that out later. All right. Well, I want to thank you both very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks for your interest.
We have just been talking with Julie Mock and Skip Dreps. Julie Mock, President of Veterans of Modern Warfare, and Skip Dreps, a local disability rights consultant. And again, you can find out more about Veterans of Modern Warfare via their website, vmwusa.org.